Aloha, everyone, and welcome to Aquarian Radio at AquarianRadio.com. And I'm your host, Janet Kirilesan, and I'm here with Jillian Green, and this is an episode of We the Anunnaki. And Jillian and I are indeed Anunnaki, and we will explain that in the course of this show. I meant to ask Jillian, you want to go by Green or Diarmont? And I'll bring her on the show. Jillian, what are you going by these days? What name
you know, you know what? Because anything I've written and any clients I have out there only know me as Jillian Diarmont. But Jillian
okay.
Green is fine. I really don't care. Jillian is fine. Just Jillian's good.
Jillian's Jillian. Good. Well, I will change that to Diarmont Green. There we go. We cover it all. Cover the bases. So you've been really busy doing a lot of shows on the Anunnaki lately. That's what we talked about.
Yes.
us a little bit more. This is exciting.
Well, that was a real surprise. Like I told you, I had my 81st birthday and decided I was starting at year one again because I said, obliterate the 80 and I'm starting at year one. And as soon as my birthday arrived and I started at year one, it was like in no time at all. The phone was ringing. I was invited to do 3 radio shows in the first 4 days. It just was interesting. People upstairs started talking again, which was interesting. And one or two people after one of the radio shows, I had some calls from people who'd heard the show, and one gentleman called, and people were asking me about readings. If I might just use a moment of time.
Please.
Right now, I would like to let people know this. I stopped doing sit-down, full-on readings for people about 3 or 4 years ago because it's become difficult for me to sit that long. You know, I never, ever had a time limit on readings, so they could run anywhere from 1 to 2 hours. And to actually just sit that long and be focused out of body that long at this age, I'm finding is too hard for me. However, having said that, and I used to earn my living, obviously, and people paid me very well and I'm very grateful for that. But, you know, good old Uncle Sam sends me my Social Security check every month now, so I actually don't need to make the money. So if anybody has questions and they want to call with a question that they think I might be able to help them with, looking at it clairvoyantly, I'm happy to do that for anybody. This is the number, 406-369-6215.
Okay, you're going to do it off the show. I thought you were going to do it during the show. I'm sorry.
I'll do it during the show as well if you want me to. That's fine. But they can also call me after the show if they have any questions. But right.
Well, say your number again. So can I
406-369-6215. And George and I will be out, will be away till the middle of March. So anybody calling, it has to be after the middle of March.
Okay, so not until the middle of March. Right.
Right.
And,
but, you know, if I can help somebody, I'll be glad to do it, and it's certainly not going to cost them anything. So.
Wow, that's very generous of you. Free is great.
Free is great.
I wish everything was free, and then we would just have all our... Anyway, I'm very, 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 very out there, space age, other society-type systems, off-planet systems, and,
right.
You know, I just wish everything was free, and, you know, we work together as a society, and everybody's needs are provided for, and forget this war stuff. The war eats up all of our resources that really belong to the people. The people deserve to have the resources of their culture, and they get eaten up by anyway. Greedy people.
But you know, you and I both know that this is imminently going to change. We've got at the most another 10 years before this whole system goes through a gigantic change, and it will be very, very different. And quite honestly, a lot of truly independent-minded, individualistic people are not going to enjoy the process of change because for a time it will be, you know, law and order everywhere. But we'll get past that and settle down into a much more equitable society, I'm sure.
I'm working on a system where it's, you know, there's a story of people that are able to give birth painlessly, you know, painless birth. So I'm working on systems where it can be very painless. And part of it is opening one's mind to the possibilities and wrapping your head around where we can go and how that can be a joyous occasion for everyone as we reconnect with each other and really feel our universe is much wider. Boy, that was loud. Was that a motorcycle?
I guess it was something outside going by. Yes.
Yeah, we have one of those here with a motorcycle. Our neighbor got one, and it's just the most obnoxious thing. And he has a train horn. And I'm sitting out in the jungle, and I go, where's the train? Oh, my goodness. There's no train coming through here. I grew up in Pittsburgh, and we had a train three blocks away. So when that went off, you could hear it where I lived. Anyway, so you were talking about the Anunnaki, and that's my favorite subject because I am an Anunnaki, and this show is called We the Anunnaki. So would you like to tell our listeners how it is that you are an Anunnaki and in what way and what do you remember?
I totally have been conscious of myself as part of the Anunnaki my whole life. I remember before I got here. I remember when I came here. I was here for a very long time on this planet before I was dropped into human form, let's put it that way. In other words, Earth human form with the short
right.
Earth lives. So this is very alien to me. I lived here for well over 10,000 years as one and part of one Anunnaki life. And then I was killed down when we were down in what is now South America. And after that, I was unable to return with the rest of the people and had to stay on this planet until I could recollect the totality of my energy. And it's taken the last 3,500 years to do it. When I say that, I'm talking about soul energy. I was killed one of those priests who cuts your heart out with an obsidian knife. You know, he slits your chest open with an obsidian knife and yanks your heart out. And and that's how he killed me. And they drug you first. They drug you with a sort of purple elixir that they force down your throat out of a tiny little bamboo cup. And you're fully conscious in your mind, but your body won't do anything you tell it. You know, it's just you're helpless. And they drag you up the steps and throw you on the stone slab, which smells disgusting, by the way, with all the dried blood and things on it. And then they raise the obsidian knife and rip it down your chest and pull out your living heart. I was very conscious of the fact that I was in trouble simply because you have those few seconds of consciousness after they've ripped it out. In other words, there's still enough oxygen in the brain to keep you aware for just a few seconds. And normally those priests would take the heart and they squeeze the blood out of it until the heart stopped beating and drank it. The warm blood. That way they took the spirit of the person. Well, I saw that this priest did not do that. I saw him immediately make a tossing motion and knew that he'd thrown my heart directly into the fire while it was still beating. And as you know, fire transmutes and transforms anything that it contacts with. It changes it completely. Fire changes things. And while we're in any physical body, of any situation, we have an amount of our soul energy, let's look at it that way, an amount of our total soul energy that we need to utilize in that lifetime that we have stored in the bodies that's here. And it's stored in the form of hydrogen molecules at the base of the heart where the muscle overlaps. There's a little tiny space in there, and that's where your soul energy actually sits all the time that you're alive. So by throwing my heart into the fire while it was still beating, in point of fact, he transmuted or transformed or completely changed my soul energy. And that scattered it to the four winds. It's kind of the same idea, you know, in the vampire stories where they have to burn them and scatter their ashes. It's the same idea. Burning and scattering. Go on.
Yes. While you're talking, I'm getting a revelation. We're going to talk about Negashita, Tom. I always forget which way to pronounce it. I guess it's dope. Anyway, Negashita describes in the Emerald Tablets how he put his original body in stasis and then came down into avatar form. So he kept his consciousness, he had his body that he could return to at any time. And that's probably why, because if they get the original form and they do this stuff, then you're kind of screwed. But you spend the last 3,000 plus years trying to, we symbol it as collect the lost pieces of your soul.
Exactly. I did it in this lifetime, the last piece, but it was only, I was already in Montana. It took me till the late 1990s before I finally got the last piece, and I knew I got the last piece the instant it happened, and this energy and I coalesced, and then I was whole, and I was my total complaining self, right? Had all my energy to make complaints with.
Yeah. There's a lot to complain about down here, let me tell you.
Right.
The weather's cold, the weather's a lot of physical pain and all kinds of stuff. Yes. I admit I'm a spoiled brat. I was on Anunnaki royalty. I came in here, I don't think my parents knew what quite to do with me. So they just let me do what I want. You and me both.
Right.
Yeah.
They actually, and I had an interesting little event happen. When I lived in Twin Bridges, this lady turned up on my doorstep. She was a total stranger, right? Didn't live in the town or anything. And she said she'd come up from Texas. She was an attorney in the U.S. military. She was a lady attorney in the military, rank of captain or something. But all her life, she said she'd been in touch with Ra, right? Now, Ra is the black sheep of my family, right? So, I thought, oh, that's interesting. What's she doing here? And she said, well, I was told by Ra that I had to come and visit with you, and I have some questions I'd like to ask you. And I thought, sneaky beggar. He's been asking me these things all my life, and I've never been willing to answer. So I said, come in. And I gave the lady a cup of tea. She's a very nice lady, and we talked for a little bit. She said, well, I'll come back tomorrow if that's all right. So I said, sure. So she came back the next day, and she had this big piece of paper in her hand, you know, like off a drawing pad that artists use, the big sheets of sketch paper. Right, well, she had that, like a parchment-y sort of paper. And there was this drawing on it of this girl, right, this female drawing with this energy field around it. It was a nice drawing, it was well executed, but nothing spectacular, you know? She said, yes. She said, Ra visited me last night, and he told me to draw this, and he directed me, and then he told me I had to bring it to you. And I said, that's very nice. And she said, yes, and he told me to write on the back. When I turned it over, it said, Happy Birthday, Anunnaki Princess, on the back.
Wow.
That's what she did. It was my birthday the next week.
Wow.
So I thought that was really odd, that kind of spooky, because, as you know, Ra, you have to be pretty darn careful of your dealings with him, because he can be very manipulative. He's very charismatic, but manipulative as well. So you need to
I have a young man from Australia who is in contact with me, and he says that he's Marduk. And so he knows actually we're having this conversation, but he says he's informed and he's apologetic for, well, you know, everything he's done before.
He's now
a young man in his mid-20s, and he's the father of a young boy that's about 3 or 4 years old. And, you know, he's married, and he's very, he's kind of the new age, I don't know what they call it, punk, but very, very new, very modern. He's a musician, but he's, the stuff that comes out of him, though, is just like, oh, my God, this is definitely an old soul. And
right.
So I wonder. I just wonder if he's a threat of Marduk.
Well, he's certainly not Marduk. That's for sure, because
right.
Marduk's coming back when the deal that he cut with the council, 15, 20 years ago, he cut the deal with him. He said, okay, the council meeting began, the foundation of it began, 3,500 years ago was the first meeting where this was laid out. And it was decided at a grand council meeting that they needed to do something to correct their own mistakes on this planet. They'd already left. They'd been gone about 500 years. The place was falling apart. People were breeding all over like rabbits, and everything was getting out of control, and they were having wars all over the place. So the Anunnaki said, this is our mess. We have to think of a way to clean it up. And that's when they came up with the idea of sending a Christed one, some enlightened being who would work with them and show them how to live right again, right? So Ningishida opted to leave him at his own self behind and come down and take on the role of the biblical King David to establish a genetic lineage so that they could birth down the line a being whose father obviously was one of the Anunnaki off-planet beings, but whose mother was 100% human with the mitochondria to produce a child with all its memories. Some child, from the moment it opened its eyes, it would know who it was, what it was, and what its job was, and what it was going to do. And they said, this is a tricky job. We need a volunteer. So the junior member of the council volunteered. And the junior member of the council at that time, unless I'm very much mistaken, was our good friend Marduk, who, as you all know, is the Egyptian god Ra, right? So he stepped up and he said, I'll do it, but on condition. And the condition is this, that I will be born to be a prince and a king of Jerusalem, which, of course, is the central hub for rulership on this planet. Right. If I can be born into a princely line, so I am legitimately the heir to the throne. And if they don't make me the king and they kill me because of the message, then the council guarantees that I get to come back and run things anyway. So they had much discussion about this, and they decided that, yes, this was the deal they would make, provided he promised to be a reformed character and do things right. Because essentially, this whole thing for the last 2,000 years of trying to teach right living has been about the Anunnaki assuaging their conscience for what they did, and balancing their own karma with this planet so they can move on, because they can't move on until we move on. They're stuck, right? So Marduk has already been promised the rulership of this planet. Unless I am totally, totally screwed up and mistaken, and I'm pretty sure I'm not. Because it is his turn.
So was this a meeting that you were a part of? What is your role? How did you get this information?
No, David told me about it, but David's Ningishida, right? The one I call David is Ningishida.
Yeah.
Ningishida's my grandfather. When I'm not down here and I'm up there, he's my grandfather. So he told me. He tells me everything.
Okay.
And has done all my life, right?
Right, so you've been in constant contact with Ningishida.
Right. And others,
so
of course.
So I've been, tracking all this down as well, and there's so many variables on the story. And I'm not judging, I'm just collecting the stories by the people that come forth. Now, this Marduk that I'm talking to, the young man from Australia, says that he was Christ. So he's confirming that. because now I'm back.
Right.
And I've come back at this young man. And I'm fully conscious of who I am.
Right. And I think that he is probably, like many of us, or many people, an aspect of that being.
Great.
Right.
And so
a being as powerful as Ra, and not yet being fully embodied on this planet, is perfectly capable of utilizing his own energy in a variety or a number of beings on this planet. I mean, you and I
right.
both know they do that. There are
And that's even outlined in the Dr. Michael Newton Institute research on life between lives. They regressed 40,000 people into the life between lives, and so there are advanced souls that are in this kind of this matrix continuum.
Right, and they can, you know, they can fragment themselves. Yeah, 50, 100 people, 200, the great souls can just knock off. I mean, many religions teach that there's no such thing as fragmenting the soul, but in point of fact, that's incorrect. The soul is housed in molecular energy, so they can take as many of the molecules and park in somebody's body as they feel like doing. And this means that the great souls, which have a vast mass of energy, can divide many, many times. So, you know, from what you're saying about this young man, I have no doubt that he carries and holds the memories and awarenesses of Marduk. I'm just saying that I don't think he is the Marduk, simply because the Marduk is coming back to rule the planet, not to be a farmer in Australia or anywhere else. He's coming back as a ruler.
So that's very interesting, and that's what Megashiva's been telling you, that Marduk is going to come back. Now, we think he's already here, and maybe never left or came back in 2012. But I think it was from Megashiva. He said that they left, and they're coming back in 2012. With 9 other gods and 12 other gods. It's a weird way of saying it. It was kind of like when Megashiva left as, what was he? He was the South American guy, Quetzalcoatl.
When he went to South America, they called him Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent.
They called him Quetzalcoatl, yeah. Yeah, so he's the one that said it. It's written in Sitchin's book, and Sasha was reminding me about it. So anyway, so I was tracking down. I wanted to get your opinion on. I'm looking at the royals in the UK and Germany and World War II, and how that was really like a battle of two brothers. We had David, once again. Who is a great-grandson of Victoria, and they have two series on now, The Crown and Victoria, and they're really taking us down to great detail, and it's based on the diaries that these, I guess the royals are required to leave very detailed diaries, because, you know, Aki dictated his diaries, his memoirs.
Most of them habitually, at the end of every day, write in their diaries. Some are better at it than others. They mostly do it. But and the history, of course, of Europe and Britain, that whole European, I mean, all the way up to into Russia. You're looking at a giant family. Right, they're all they were all related, and as far as I know, none of them have royal blood. They become royals; they've made themselves royal, but they're not the only royal line. So, true royal line, so far as I'm aware, was through Mary Queen of Scots and the Stuarts. That's, I believe,
right.
that if
so
you if you want to go down the bloodlines from the Merovingians in France, then you end up with the Stuarts, and that's the royal bloodline. The rest of them are.
Because I was, my partner before my husband was Jason Stewart. But I've got something with the, well, we have to define royals and so that the Merovingians, and but I think we're tracing back to the Anunnaki, and there's one common ancestor that has the blue eyes and introduced blue eyes. So if you've got blue or green eyes, you've got this bloodline, especially if you're Rhesus negative, and I am O negative. So I'm looking at myself, and I did my genealogy, and I'm like all Northern European, and then I married a Russian husband, and he's got the blue eyes. So it's almost like on some subconscious level we're drawn to find each other again, and we never had children, but we're, you know, we're married and we're partners, so we've got this common ancestry. So you're saying the Stuarts through Mary, Queen of Scots, and Mary was that Henry's? Was that
Mary's son? She was her cousin Elizabeth I of England had her killed, her beheaded.
Yeah.
But Mary, Queen of Scots' son, was King James the Fifth of Scotland and James the First of England. So for a while we did have the. Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, depends.
I heard that he was kind of crazy. This is what Sasha, he's kind of research, you know, historian. He said,
well,
John was a bit crazy.
You know, he was different. Let's put it that way. But so much, I don't know why. Maybe there was an antagonism in the among the British writers, the English writers, to write anything good about him. But he actually did a lot of very good things. And if you research his history in document form, as opposed to books that people have necessarily written about him, he's not nearly as bad as they made out. I mean, yes, he had some pretty bad things going on, but not as bad as they make out. And he, the other side was that he was a highly intelligent man, a gifted writer, and just so many talents going on. I mean, I'm not in favor of him one way or the other, but he certainly wasn't the bad character or as bad as has been made out. That's for sure.
I'm looking at how are they related. So King James was related to Henry VIII. Elizabeth I was a cousin. So anyway, I guess we'd have to look it up. But they were all related.
Well,
is Elizabeth part of it?
Yeah. I mean, they all had relationships at that time. But then you come to a point in history where actually at the end of Tudors, Plantagenets, what came after that? But you come to a point in history where you no longer have the true royal bloodline in there. And then, of course, by the time you get to Victoria, you'd had King George III on the throne, who was crazy. I mean, he had a porphyria. As far as they can work out, he suffered from porphyria. And when he died, he had no one of his own, and his niece, Victoria, came on the throne. But by then, the entire British royalty was German. They're all German. The court of Victoria spoke German. Yeah, they spoke German.
Yeah. And so these shows are talking about the and yet somehow they're related to the Anunnaki. I mean, Elizabeth the First, So anyway, they're here, and they intermarry. You can just observe it. They won't marry outside of their line, or they'll go with kind of like the bastard line, but they still are very bigoted, and they won't marry outside of their bloodline. And that is what we're looking at, is the Anunnaki royals, what's left of them. And they basically control, you know, the world, from what I'm getting. And the reason why World War II really went so bad was because David went down to, he was hanging out with Hitler. And they are revealing these letters, and he, after he abdicated the throne and his younger brother took over, Bertie, he was bombing the hell out of London, his own people, because he was hoping to bomb them into submission and take back the throne. So this is a brother against brother thing, just like we had with Enki against Enlil and vice versa. And it's going through. So then the next generation, Elizabeth, she marries Philip, and he's a Mountbatten. He gets his name Mountbatten, but he's a Nazi. He's down. He's related to them. He goes to bury his sister, and there's this full Nazi funeral, and he's walking behind it, and he's going, "Oh my God!" You know, he's terrified of the Hail Hitler, and the whole city was. Was swastikas, and so he came back and was back in England and being raised and sent to the Scottish school up there to humanize him a bit. But still, the Mountbattens and this whole dichotomy between the two clans was going on. So they killed the Mountbattens somewhere in the 70s, I think it was. They're through the ancients of the modern time. They're still doing their stuff. They're still killing each other. They're still competitive. So what do you get is going on here? When is this ever going to be over? This is a war. This is a family feud. That's what it is. And we are the pawns.
Yeah, exactly.
Family feud. Go ahead.
Okay. So I think what you have to do is take a giant step back, right? Right back, and look at the planet and its people from an entirely different point of view. And I am not advocating this as right by any manner of means. I'm simply saying that this, in a way, is the way it is, right? I don't like it, but if you go back in history, not very far, a couple of hundred years, and look at China, you will find that the Mandarin class in China, for example, this is an example, all had names. But all the people who lived in their villages and towns had no names. They were only known by what they did. So they would be called, you know, cook, sweeper, gardener, cleaner. And that's why in the Chinese culture, right up till this last century, you get families full of children that only have numbers, number one, number two, number three. When they say number three son, they're not joking. That was all the child was known by, because ordinary people were not given names. Now, this idea goes all the way back to creation. In the book of Genesis, it tells you that God names something. He says the word and it is, right? He names it, and it is. God says frog, and there's a frog. The idea of naming something is allied with the act of creation. And so the people who were granted that were the ruling echelons, because they had the right to create things, meaning they could create buildings, they could create countries, they could create wars, they could create things. And therefore, they had names, and the rest of the people didn't. Now, if you keep in the back of your mind that idea, that concept, is still there as the backcloth of our society, of the whole world. But the ones now with the names are the Rockefellers and all the Bilderberger crew and the Rothschilds and the kings and queens of England and Europe and the rulers of China and the emperor of Japan. People are the ones that have names, and the rest of us don't. We don't warrant names, right? We just exist. And in that context, everybody on the planet, out of the 8 billion people, there's probably less than a quarter of a billion that have, in that idea, names. The other 7¾ billion are nothing. That's the underlying concept. And that's what's behind all these rulerships. And that's because, from the Anunnaki, right? There were the gods and there were men. Two distinct, very separate societies. Not seeing themselves as not all human in some way, not all interacting genetically in some way, but nonetheless, there were the gods and there were men. Now we have the world's royalty, right? All of them, which includes everybody who can afford it, right? And the rest of us. It's the same thing, and nothing has changed. Nothing has changed, and nothing will change in a major way until we get completely different ideas, until the people without names, in other words, all of us, take back our planet and say, this is our planet, and we have as much right to live here as you, and sorry, Queen of England, you don't have the right to 50,000 square miles of Scotland just for your own entertainment, or 50,000 acres it is, 50,000 acres at Balmoral, just so you can go fishing. We all have the right to fish in the River Dee, right? It belongs to everybody. But until people themselves change, they're never going to be in a position to do that. Until they can share among themselves, they're never going to be able to enforce the idea of sharing on the others. We have to, if we want to be equal with the gods, right, then we have to behave as equals, and that means treating each other as equals, and we don't. I can't say I'm equal to the Queen of England, but those people down the street are not equal to me. I can't say that. If I want to be equal to the Queen of England, then everybody else on the planet has to be equal to me as well. Do you get what I'm trying to say here?
Great. Yes.
So we have to...
We're looking at these things. So you said stewards. So the names that are actually occupations are like a caste class system differentiating us from the royals. Is there a list of the names that identify the royals? You said Rockefeller.
George has a book at the warehouse, and it's called Committee of 300. You can look it up on his website. And that names the 300 families and their relatives who actually run this planet. And it was written several years ago, 20 years ago, by John Coleman. John Coleman was changed his name. He had a different name at the time. But he was a member of MI6, which is the British Secret Service. And he just, when he got out of that, he came to America, he changed his name, and he started writing. And the first book he produced, which actually George financed so he could get it written, is called The Committee of 300. And it's very worthwhile reading for anybody to get educated. It will educate you, and it will be amazing to you because it's an easy book to read. It's not a heavy political book at all. It's easy reading. It's a quick, fast read to get through, but it's fascinating, and it names all the names.
I'm going to see if I can get it.
You can get it on George's website.
Okay. Wow. So Ra is coming back.
Right. I believe he's back on the planet, actually.
And he's back. Right. You think he's back? And so who's in charge? It's not the royals?
No, I don't think the Anunnaki have taken on their role of leadership as yet. Their intent was to let us run through this whole cycle to its end, making our own decisions about, you know, government and wars and how we want it to run things until we come to the end of the cycle, which, as you know, or my information is 2025 over 2026, is the end of this cosmic cycle. and that after that, they will start stepping forward. I am sure that they are already working with individuals on the planet, getting things in motion. And I know, for instance, that at James Gilliland's property in Oregon, Western Washington State, near Mount Hood, he has the Anunnaki there all the time. And he is interacting with them. And they have, out of the mile or two from the back of his property, there's a mountain. And you can see their ships come out of there every night. Anybody can go and see them. You know? They are, and James Gilliland specifically is interacting with the Anunnaki. That's in contact with them on a regular basis, according to what he said.
And you are.
So I know that I know they're back on the planet.
So tell us about your interactions with the Anunnaki. You said that there's been a revival of contact.
Well, I want to say that they're back and making their presence known. Are they talking to me like they did all my life on a daily basis? Absolutely no. And I would not classify my interaction with them, say, with the interaction that James Gilliland is currently having, for example, because he says he's actually working with them and helping them set up certain projects. And I'm not doing that. However, I would, you know, remind you that as far as the Anunnaki are concerned, I'm a 20-year-old. Right?
Right. Oh,
and
yes,
I'm a spoiled brat. And I'm useless. So they're not going to be wasting their time telling me very much of what's going on. I mean, why would they? They have more than enough to do taking things in whatever direction they're trying to take them in. So I would not expect to have personal contact like I used to have when they would be turning up and visiting me and all kinds of things. My whole life. You know, they stopped doing that in about, 2000. And since then, at least 8 or 9 years, it's only been very occasional interaction when they've made themselves known. But they did turn up in holographic form. There were 2 or 3 of them here about 3-4 nights ago. And they were just visiting.
Oh.
They were just visiting, and one of my dear friends, Edna, who's also with them, she came back with them, and they just stopped by to say hello, and we're here, and we'll be in touch, you know, that kind of visit. Nothing spectacular. But I do know that they're much more around me, because that's why I'm volunteering now to help people if they call me. Because when that gentleman called me after the radio show, in which I talked for 2 solid hours about the Anunnaki, pure and simple, and they turned up that night, the next night, then the gentleman who'd heard the show called me. And as soon as he called, it's like my mind's gone as clear as a bell again. I could just tack right in, boom. It's like they turned up and reactivated me, as it were. And it's not, I stopped reading because it was getting too hard for me. It was always giving me a headache or something. But now it's fine. I can't sit for a couple of hours. And I have no need to anyway. It's not what people need now. But I can find the answer to things just quick as a flash. It's like I know the answer almost before they've asked the question. And that's because they've come back and reactivated me. I know. I mean, I'm very conscious
of
that.
They can give us a recharge.
Reboot. Pull the plug and then plug it back in again.
I'm having a lot of contact, but I don't think they're taking my physical form. It's like they're rejuvenating my form when I come in my astral body, and I have all these experiences, and then I'll come back in my form and I'll feel re-energized, like they're doing what they can to help maintain this physical form. Because I've had some bouts with like weird pains, and I try not to self-diagnose, because then There's a part of my mind that's very suggestive, and I'll start manifesting the symptoms into the disease. So it's like not doing an exercise, you'll just create it, and then I'll go down a path, and then I'll just transmute it, and it'll be totally fine, and I'll get it verified, and go to the doctor, oh, you're really helping, and that type of thing. So, but there's definitely... they're educated. They have this huge education
right, yes,
going
and
on an ongoing basis.
If anybody is listening to this, it's you don't have to be an odd person like Kira and I, who know ourselves as Anunnaki from day one and think, oh, well, it's all right for you, but I'm just a human here. Mm-hmm. I don't remember being Anunnaki. No, this is for everybody. Everybody has the Anunnaki gene. And therefore, everybody, if they choose to, can make that connection with the Anunnaki. And right now, since Nibiru passed us so closely last year, there is terrific residual energy from the passing of the crossing planet. And it's so much easier now to break those barriers. If you thought about it before and decided it was not working for you, to be in contact yourself, if that's what you would like, then I suggest that you try it again. You make the effort to focus and give them permission to contact you. And remember that they have more than one means. One of the main means that the Anunnaki use to contact people on this planet is through the dream state. When you are dreaming, they come and they give you messages directly into your mindset. So if you have interesting or unusual dreams, take out the main components of it. Don't fret all the detail, just the main components, and try and understand what it's telling you, because they do use the dream state a lot to get through to you. You might even like to get yourself a dream book and tell them, okay, I'm going to use this dream book to interpret my dreams with. So if you want to tell me something, please use this as a sort of a language between us. You know, like, if you dream of spaghetti, it means you need to go and tidy up your closet or whatever it is in the dream book. Tell them that you're going to use that dream book, and then you can check your dreams by that means. Or you can just make a note of the main parts and work it out for yourself. But the dream state is very much used. They can also come and inspire you to have ideas. And they are particularly fond, don't ask me why, but my experience with them is, when they're off planet, is that they are particularly fond of watching television, movies on television. If you sit down to a movie, good movies, nice movies, you remember movies like John Wayne movies, when he was in that one, The Quiet Man, or Gone with the Wind, or all kinds of movies, but they seem to like movies that have a sort of romantic thread running through them in a quiet sort of way. And they will turn up and stand around in your room. You will feel the energy. If you can't see them, you will still feel the energy. The room will heat up without you turning the heat on. And then you'll find suddenly you feel as if you're sitting in a cold draft. Well, that's because they're sucking all the thermal energy to maintain themselves here in their projected form. And today as well, more than projecting themselves energetically, they are using, and they have done for many years now, holographic images. So if there's one of them in your room, even if you cannot see them, but you sense there's somebody else in this room with me, and you slowly, slowly let your eyes glance around, you might see one area of your wall which seems to be shimmering. There's like a wave to it, or a shimmer. It's because they're standing in front of it. And you can't see them, but you can see the wall shimmering. And you look at the rest of the room, and the rest of the wall looks normal, but this piece of wall looks strange, right? So there's all kinds of ways they can come to you and reach you, and they can reach out to you energetically and pop ideas into your head. So try and think in terms of, if you would like to be connected with them, and now is a good time to do that, then just try these different ways of making that connection for yourself. Anybody can do it. Anybody.
Yeah, they can. Right, because they're just waiting for you to be proactive in the process. They're not,
right.
They really care about us individually and collectively, and they don't want to scare us. But they often they may try attempt contact, you know, at your invitation, and then you get freaked out, and then, you know, they'll back off until and give you time and space to learn how to be present with them and to be okay with them in the room with you, and things do shift when they're around. And I know that
right.
very well. I often kind of like I'm bi-located. I'm there, but I'm in my room as well, and I'll be back in my body and back in the bed, and I'll say to Sasha, I'm still in the vibratory frequency of where I was just at. And, I ask them, can you sense the difference in the vibration? It's a much higher level, but it feels often like I'm bathing in love because there's a lot of love coming.
Right.
When we're separated from love, or we feel separate from love because of these thick skins that we have. We're in the skin encapsulated substance. But when you're in a higher vibratory frequency and the separation between self and the parent other is less dense,
right.
You always feel love.
yes, and I would say something about that and see what you think. Because I don't think that love is coming directly from the Anunnaki. But I think it's become, because it's way beyond their pay grade, right? Let's put it that way.
Uh-huh.
At the present time.
Yeah.
At the present time. But I because it's so much easier to access that frequency now than it was, say, 30 or 40 or 50 years ago, when it was quite a struggle to put yourself in that place, and now you can just move into it anytime you feel like it. I think it's because the Anunnaki themselves have made the resolve, more than half of them, to try and get back to who and what they were in the beginning. In other words, most of them are no longer interested in this planet or rulership on it or anything else to do with the sensory lives that we have here, and they're much more
mm-hmm.
interested in getting back to the spiritual beings they were. So with such a large number of them focused on higher frequencies, by default it filters down to us. It's like they've pushed open the doors again, and now it's easy for us to get the overflow, so to speak, and to tap into it ourselves and move ourselves into that frequency.
I have a question.
Go on.
Okay. Do you know the history of the Anunnaki? Are they, I'm getting some different reports of people that are going back further in time, you know, before they came to the Earth, to the birth process for Enki and Nimma and Enlil and their parentage, because apparently they don't all share a same mother. Their father in Anu is common, but the there was one report I got recently that in order to solve a kind of a intergalactic war between planets, there was an agreement to marry into the Draconian type species. So there were two main threads of species, humanoid, kind of Lyran humanoid, and then the Draco, Draconian dragon. And so in order to settle the wars in space that were going on, you know, hundreds of thousands and even billions of years ago, they agreed to mix the two bloodlines, and that's why we have the reptilian brain. So when people say, oh, they're a bunch of reptiles and trying to demonize them, it's like, I always say, well, we're part reptilian, so there's some kind of agreement there. So it's been symbolized in many different ways. Have you ever asked David what happened, or do you remember of your own?
You see, I have a whole different story to that.
Okay.
And you know, if you would be kind enough to keep in mind that anything I know at all about anything, it's either because David and the guys have told me, or because it's in my own living memory. Right. So, and as I'm still only in current life Anunnaki terms, only a 20-year-old, and probably how many 20-year-olds remember what they learned in school? Not many, right? So,
Right.
So keeping that in mind, right, having said that, the Anunnaki, as far as I am concerned, began their life as with the creation. They were created from the light. They did not come out of the creation. They came down into the creation. They were in themselves a direct emission of the source itself, creatures of pure light, who over a period of time and experiences became more dense and more attached to the sensory life in the physical reality of planetary systems. So, I mean, I know a lot more about it than that, but that's briefly my knowledge of the source of the Anunnaki. That's why they are immortal beings from day one, and no matter what they do or how bad they get or how many bad things they've done, they are still immortal beings. End of that little story.
That's why I remember my different names at different stages. So my original source name is Joy, and then the subparsing lower vibratory frequency, I took the name of Kira, and then I came down and took the name of Mimma, and now I'm down here as Janet. But there's a continuous thread of remembering all the way back to source, and people are saying, you can't possibly go back to source. I go, well, I have.
Yes, you can. When you're Anunnaki, you certainly can, because that's where you began with source. Earth humans began on Earth, right? Now, let's deal with the reptilians. First of all, everybody has reptilian DNA, all of us. Right? It's part of the Darwinian concept of coming out of the ocean, going through the reptilian period and developing the way we developed on this planet. So everybody has reptilian DNA, and it's the smooth skin inside your mouth, the buccal mucosa inside your mouth, and all the other parts of your body where you have that soft, shiny tissue. That's from your reptilian DNA. And it's part of being a human on this planet. Right? Now, the reptilians that they talk about in space did not begin in even this universe. They came to this universe millions of years ago after a mishap in the central core of the universe, the source energy itself. There was, David said it was like a lightning strike or an earthquake. I mean, just there was a glitch, right? And that glitch in the core of creation allowed the reptilians to move from their own universe through the center into our universe. Universes are not generally connected one to another. And I'm not talking about parallel planes of experience in one universe. I'm talking about entirely separate universes, which, according to the Anunnaki information, there are 294 created simultaneously when our universe came into being, all at the same time. So the reptilians, at some time, eons ago, came through from their universe into our universe and established a base for themselves on the planet Draco. They are not human. They are entirely different to humans. They are spacefaring species. They always have been. They have a completely different value system to us, and they have learned at some time in their history to make some kind, and I don't know how it was done, I have no detail of it, but I do know it's possible, it has been possible for them to get some of their DNA into some other species, including some humans. They do inhabit some humans. I've seen two of them in my lifetime, right? I've actually encountered two human beings who were fully manifest themselves as reptilian beings. The greys, right? The greys are a different species, and there are two kinds of greys. There are the small silver ones, silvery grey ones, like you see off the little spaceships, you know, that crashed at Roswell, those little beings.
Yes.
And I call them the silver people because they're really more a silvery colour when they're alive, right? They are affiliated with the Anunnaki. The Anunnaki took them on I don't know how many millions of years ago, but 4 million years ago, I know they were already with the Anunnaki because I can remember things that far back. All right. So at some point throughout history, the planet was destroyed, and the Anunnaki took the remnants of that species and has had them as helpers and assistants ever since. And they are great with anything electronic, which means that they actually are wonderful healers because they can work on the electrical field of the body, right? So anything to do with electricity or electrical fields, they are fantastic with. And they, for a very long time, have been workers with, associated with, helpers of the Anunnaki in general. The other greys that work with the government, they're different altogether. I honestly don't know much about them except that they are best avoided. And they are the ones who, in part, have cooperated with governments, and you see their features as, I mean, for all time, not just recently, you see their features on the churches in the Middle Ages as the gargoyles outside the churches. They were representative of the grey aliens. They don't have our best interest at heart, let's put it that way, but there aren't that many of them. I don't know that we need to be concerned about them. They're not in any quantity.
And clarify something that got a little bit confused, but it's great what you're saying. I love it. And we're going to, as I promised, we're going to keep this around an hour. We are a little bit over an hour, but we're going to keep it short. And we'll do this again because I think this conversation that we're having here is somehow going to benefit the world, because this time, I don't know who's going to find it or how, but those who need to will find themselves drawn to this conversation and listen to it. But I wanted to clarify, so the Dracos came from another reality. How did this humanoid form that most of us inhabit here on Earth get?
You know, I'm sorry, Janet, I can't hear you. I can't hear you. You're fading. Will you repeat that for me?
Okay, let me see if I can. Okay, I wanted to know, how does this human form that we are currently in, humanoid form, human being, how did the human being form get reptilian DNA? Did you say that and I missed it, or?
No, we have the DNA because on this planet, remember this planet, imagine it in the beginning. What is there in the beginning, right? There's the ocean and there's the land, right? And out of the sea come the creatures and they crawl onto the land. Darwin, in his idea of evolution, had it exactly right. Now, at some point, as people were developing, as their intelligence was developing, right, they acquired other gifts and attributes and abilities. But we started out as an animal species evolving on this planet. We were still animal species evolving when the Anunnaki altered us. We're part, human beings on Earth are part of the flora and fauna of the planet, as every species has been on every planet. They've developed with the planet, out of the planet.
What we've discovered is that what they do is they terraform and introduce species, and then there's interventionism, and periodically these higher level awareness beings come in, do other experiments and introduce other species. So there is intervention and acceleration. You know, they might have an experiment. It's like, okay, this is going too slow, and they accelerate things.
Right.
So apparently humans, whatever we were developing, had been plagued with and DNA added and taken away and altered and changed before the Anunnaki came here.
Right.
The Anunnaki came in and did their intervention.
Remember that this planet had gone through a great cycle. First of all, it had come into being, right? The planet had come into being, and life had evolved on it while it was protected by the asteroid belt that nobody could get through. So how many millions and millions of years that was, I have no idea. I mean, that is so far. What I am fairly certain of is that this universe, this creation, is approximately one-third of its way through its development. We've had one-third of the before we get to a sell-by date. We've had about a third of the time. And I base that idea on the fact that science tells us we have two particles of dark matter for every particle of light matter. And, of course, light is what shines on the darkness and manifests it into it to a reality. It converts the dark matter into light matter and makes and creates reality in an ongoing way. This has been going on since the beginning. So long before the Anunnaki came to this planet, there may have been many levels of civilization developed and collapsed and developed and collapsed. The point is, and the whole point, as far as I'm concerned, is that because the Anunnaki came to this civilization, this period of Earth's history, and to the people who were on it at the time that they came here, 4 or 5 million years ago, whenever it was, that because of the genetic engineering, because they put two Anunnaki genes into the human genome, the humans on this planet are no longer tied to the fate of the planet, which has never happened in history before. Every other planet that's ever been has had civilizations rise and fall, and when the sun died, red dwarf or whatever they call it, the planet perished, and every living thing on it perished with the planet. And then you had to start again. Well, for us on this planet, that's not true anymore, because the people on this planet, since the Anunnaki genetic engineering, now have the potential for immortality. They did not have that before. They had the potential for 10s of thousands of years of reincarnation, but reincarnation eventually comes to an end when the planet dies and everything dies with it. All living things are gone. Right, you've no more reincarnation. But because of that Anunnaki gene, remember what I said at the beginning, the Anunnaki did not begin on a planet. They began with the source. They are pure, immortal beings of light. So even though they've done dreadful things throughout their history, their genes are still immortal genes. And when they put two of them into our genome, that made us potentially immortal as well. And that's what matters. That's what I've been yelling about for the last 50 years. We have to claim our immortality because we're coming to the end of a planetary cycle. And when the cycle ends, if you haven't bothered to claim your immortality, you're at risk of losing it.
So that's why years ago when I came to Hawaii, this guy, I was bored, so I went and got my chart done. And this guy said, you have to come to my house, and I'm going to show you the chart. It's back when they did it by hand. And I said, well, it's like 2 hours, you know, hour each way. No, I can't say this on the phone. Come to the house. So when I went there, he says, I have to tell you something. I've never seen this before. I don't see where you die. I go, what? He goes, no. He says, when I do somebody's chart, I see where they end, but I don't tell people. But I can't see where you end. I don't know. It's either so far in the future. So at the time, I just went, okay, you know, let's look it in. But maybe that's what this is about. You know, you said you're starting out with day one. To stop identifying with the years that you have put into this planet, but just identify with your immortal self, which is physically immortal. And that makes so much sense. And I'm going to have you come on and tell my husband. So he stop believing you're X amount of years old and become who you are, which is an eternal being. Then we can really get something done here. But I think the advantage of having the belief system that we're going to expire in X amount of years is that, okay, well, I'm going to die when I'm, you know, 90 or 200 or whatever, and I better get stuff done. So if we came in knowing that we've got, you know, this immortal life, endless time, we might not have done what we needed to do in order to accomplish what we've done thus far. And I think we're doing pretty good. Well, I'm going to wrap this up because I promised you it would be about an hour. And I think it's better we have the shorter shows. We could talk forever, you and I. And I want to tell our listeners, so we're going to be at the International UFO Congress, ufocongress.com. Let me get the date, which is coming up.
14th of February, Valentine's Day.
14th. So we're going to have a table, and I hope, Jillian, that you come over and sit with me. I'm open to meeting people. Come up and say hi. Dr. Lesson will be there, and George is coming, George Green with Jillian, and we're going to hang out, and we're there to kind of rub elbows with everybody and say
and
howdy.
Answer questions.
Aloha.
Answer
questions. Yeah, it's time for everybody to wake up, and I'm a nerd, and my husband's a nerd, and Jillian, you sound like you're nerdish, too. We just study and correlate information.
I'm a total nerd.
Total nerd. George, I know George is a nerd. And we're here to help humanity, because that's what it's really about. It's not about money. It's about love, sharing the love and waking up everybody so we can all I see us having this huge party, the whole world, in this enormous celebration.
That would be good.
I think that would be good.
And while you're down here partying, I'll be in my little spaceship zooming off somewhere else.
Oh, well, you'll just make a holographic appearance and say, hi, I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you for being my friend. Anyway, I'm going to let us go, but we will be back, listeners, I promise you. Jillian, I just love you so much. It's a delight as usual. I can't wait for us to see each other again. And, you know, I was talking to Michael Sala. You know Dr. Michael Sala, Jillian, who he is? Anyway, he's a nice guy.
No, I don't.
And he said
you know
that
me.
We
I
started
don't know anybody.
Well, anyway, I've been so blessed to get to meet everybody by being a radio host and attending all these conferences. But he said that the lately the military has been interacting with a species of tall whites. So they're probably Anunnaki. And they're they're in total cooperation with humanity, and they're here to, you know, redirect us away from this Armageddon type scenario that's been laid out for us, you know, over the last couple thousand years. So that was good news, and I hope it's true. But I think it is. So we will continue
I think it probably is. Yeah, I think it probably is. And I'll tell you I won't tell you why. I'll tell you next time we talk.
Go ahead and tell us the final thing. Tell us why, because we're leaving on a high note. Go ahead. Tell us why.
Well, because all the war and the chaos was, as it's planned by the evil government, let's put it that way, the evil governments of the world who planned these terrible things for us, they were trying to do it in line with biblical prophecy, and they wanted it to run in that line by starting the war in the year 2000. And that's, you know, they went to the Gulf and they did their best, right? But part of that component from Revelations is that, you know, there has to be devastation in Israel and blah, blah, blah. And there's a whole scenario for that, a whole plan of how it's supposed to unfold. And it was supposed to last 15 years. That would be 2015. Then we'd have run out of the men and munitions and would have to pack in and go home. And then that left them 10 clear years to get the planet on the right track, ready for the next cycle, right? Which begins in 2026, the next swing of the pendulum. But they've run out of time. The bad guys didn't get their war started, so now they don't have time to have all the trouble they were wanting to have. It's enough to deal with the global earth changes themselves, which are natural. You know, the natural events that are going on the planet happen about every 50,000 years geologically. So there's nothing out of line with that. That's perfectly normal. But all the man-made stuff that we've added to it and the wars and the rumors of wars, this we no longer have time to start, go through, and finish and clean up before the next cycle. So this, I believe, is why the off-planet friends are trying to step in and give some guidance of how we can avoid what was already planned for us by our own ruling body. I'm going back to that committee of 300. Get on George's website, or you can get it on Amazon.com.
Okay.
Committee of 300. Read it. Because it's a real eye-opener, and it will bring everything into line with what we know from a spiritual perspective. Just understanding
who those people are,
then you look at the planet and you can see how they've brought it about. But because they haven't completed it in the necessary time frame, then somebody has to change the outcome, and maybe that's what's going to fix it for it. Not fix it, but help us. Get through it in the best way possible and come out the other side smiling. That's what I'm hoping for.
Me too.
Yes.
All right.
Well, it's been lovely talking to you, Janet. So thank you very much.
It's always lovely talking to you. I enjoy it thoroughly, and we will be back. Not sure when, but I'll keep posted.
See you next week.
Yeah, we'll see you in person next week. Okay, much love and blessings. And aloha.
And to you. Aloha to you and to all your
aloha,
listeners.
Aloha, dear. Okay.
Bye.
I'm trying to find my exit music. Bye. Here we go.
Bye.
Aloha. Bye-bye.